symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
Hello and welcome to Arn. This is Paul Bromwell, and today I'm joined by the Hall of Famer, the founder of the Four Horsemen, the man synonymous with the television title, the man with the tan, the left hand and the right hand to the nature boy for so many years. He's the enforcer. He's Double A, Arn Anderson. Arn, how are you this week?
That was a mouthful.
It was. There was a lot to get out there, buddy.
Did you come up with that?
Oh, yeah, man. You know, we're trying to come up with something a little fresh, a little different every single week.
I like it.
All right. Well, listen, man. Hey, I'm excited to have you here. You and I, this is called Arnamania Day because for those that don't know, obviously, well, everybody knows the holidays are coming up. So you and I thought, hey, why don't we get together and just let's knock out the next couple episodes together. And we're having one of those days together where you and I are doing maybe one, no, not one, maybe two, no, not two. How about three episodes plus a Zoom tonight for ad-free shows? So we got a lot going on today, Arn.
You're the workhorse, my friend. This is easy for me, just chatting with folks and talking about, you know, the old days and the glory years and all that. Man, it's, but you know what? I do love Christmas. It's just, one of those times where, to me, I can just sit on the couch and put on Yellowstone or one of our favorite shows, Tulsa, the new thing with Stallone,
okay.
Tulsa something or other.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if you're watching it.
I'm not watching it, but I know what you're talking about. I've seen it advertised. I think it's on Amazon Prime, maybe. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, it is. If you're not watching Yellowstone, you need to be killed.
Okay, wow, there you
go. It's that good.
Okay.
It's that good. And just sit there with the family and pop some popcorn or fish out some Fritos and onion dip
and
relax.
There's some advice from the man right there, and I love every bit of it. And that's what this time of year is all about. It's relaxing and spending time with the family. But you and I are going to do that a little bit today, talking about good old wrestling and the old memories. We're going to talk January 1991. Dude, before we get there, though, I want to talk a little bit about your memoir, Arn Anderson, My Life as Wrestling's Enforcer. It's fully funded, and because of the response of this project, we crushed the first set of stretch goals since the last time you and I had gotten together, and are in the process of finishing off the second set. Over $27,000 has been raised for this project to date, and we're anticipating a release date. Listen, May 2023. Arn, Dirk Manning and his team have done it again, my friend. What thoughts can you share with our audience about this project and your autobiography?
Well, Dirk and his crew have really been great. They've been flexible, and they understood that, you know, I wanted to make this thing something that people, when they read it and then they can't put it down, hopefully, and finally get through it, and they go, wow, I didn't know that. If you get that, you've accomplished your goal already. And how much you want to share of yourself. You know, I was thinking that and thinking about it, and how much do you, you know, how much do you think people are interested in or really want to hear, or is it going to be a bummer, or is it going to be a downer, or are they not going to be believers, you know? So I thought, well, you know what, just do what you've always done, tell the truth. If they believe it, they believe it. If they don't, they don't, but it's going to be an eye-opener.
Mm. Man, I can't wait for it to come out, and I can't wait, as you said, an eye-opener. There's stories that haven't been shared before. If you're an Arn Anderson fan whatsoever, this is that must-have item that you need to add to your collection, and so definitely check it out. ArnComic.com is the place to go where you can get your pre-order in, and so check it out. Arn, before we get into the show this week, though, I wanted to touch on the health situation of your dear friend and colleague, the legendary Barry Windham. As many of our listeners know, Barry suffered a heart attack a couple weeks ago, and his life was saved by a stranger who performed CPR until an ambulance arrived. Barry is recovering from the cardiac event, but like so many of our favorite wrestlers, he doesn't have health insurance. There's a GoFundMe that's been set up by his real-life brother-in-law, Mike Rotundo. Barry needs all the help he can get, buddy. And if you're able to assist financially to all of our listeners, send the prayers and positive vibes to the greatest pure worker the Horsemen ever had. Barry, we are here for you. And here at the Orange Show, we're certainly rooting for you. So I just wanted to share that with our audience, man.
Thank you, Paul. Barry is a special human being, a special performer. You know, we sing his praises every time. Going through my life and the time that I spent with Barry as an opponent or as a partner, you know, it was the same thing, just a quality human being. And, man, when I heard about this, it just floored me. And whoever that angel was that happened to see it happen, recognize it, go out of his way, he saved Barry's life, and we'll never be, whoever you are out there, we'll never be able to repay you for saving Barry and doing what you did. So whoever you are out there, God bless you. Something good will happen to you and for you, I'm 100% sure, because what you did was exemplary.
Without a doubt. Barry, our thoughts and prayers are with you, my friend. And make sure you check out that GoFundMe page and let's support Barry with his health recovery as he battles back from this cardiac event. Arn, we transition that news into talking about you and Barry more this week. Last week, we talked about the decision to have Flair be the Black Scorpion, wrapping up that storyline for good. We officially put a bow on it. We also talked about how you and Barry stole the show with Doom in a street fight. Arn, social media lit up with comments about people who remembered that match. Several of our listeners even indicating this is one of the greatest street fights they can ever remember seeing. And all of them echoed the same sentiment that you shared with us, buddy. The believability of the match is what made it so special. And since we have saw those comments over and over again, I thought we should mention it. So I just wanted to bring that up. But man, we kind of tugged at some heartstrings and brought back the memories of that great street fight that you had there in that match at Starrcade.
Credibility and believability are not two shortcomings of those two guys. I can tell you that. Simmons and Butch Reed, man, they were just standing in front of you, and if you could hang with them, you could hang. If you couldn't, you got plowed, and that's the way it was.
Well, and you're not done working with those guys, so we're going to jump into it this month, January 1991, and I want to start by discussing how Sting's first run as the world title would end, because that comes to a close here this month in January. Following the unveiling of Flair as the Black Scorpion, Sting and Flair, Arn, wrestled around the loop for the next 30 days. The title, though, would change hands in East Rutherford, New Jersey at the Meadowlands on January the 11th. And you got to think about this, because this is traditionally WWF country. But due to financial concerns, particularly taxes enforced by the Athletic Commission, because wrestling was considered a sport, WWF would not run in this arena again until SummerSlam 1997. The event here had 5,000 fans in attendance, and this is partly due to a massive snowstorm. And in our first clip of the week, we do have, believe it or not, the closing moments of the match. And we're going to check it out together, Arn. We're going to watch Ric Flair win his 7th world title. This, guys, is from January 11th, 1991. Flair takes the title back from Sting. Let's check it out together, Arn.
Okay.
Sting with the Irish whip. Here comes the Stinger splash. Oh, but nobody home. Nobody there. Sting may have knocked the breath out of himself there. The heavyweight champion of the world sailed into the top turnbuckle. And now Ric Flair will go up to the top. Sting with the right hand. He's going to bring the challenger down. Flair slammed almost halfway across the ring by the champion of the world. Flying clothesline. This may be all. Flair has been battered and we're inches away. Sting thought he had it. He thought he had it right there. And now the Stinger. High risk move. He's on the top rope. Flair making his way up to his feet. There goes Sting. Oh no! He hit the referee. Sting's right knee hit the referee. Pasquale pinned, but the referee is out of it. It had to be inadvertent. Obviously it was. And now Flair from behind. A real cheap shot as he knees Flair to the or Sting to the outside. Inside cradle again. The champion has Flair pinned. The referee cannot get up to make the count. Sting really cooking now. They go to the ropes. Oh, their heads crack together. Flair falls on top. The referee to make the count. Sting's foot is on the rope. Sting's foot was on the rope rail. Sting had his foot on the rope. I don't think the referee saw it. Ric Flair's going to win the title. Ric Flair, Sting's foot was on the rope. Flair wins the title for the seventh time. Ric Flair is the new heavyweight champion.
So there you have it. Flair is the world champion once again. And I want to talk to you a little bit about this arm, because the decision was made to put the championship back on Rick. But if you go back in time, we remember, as we've gone through your career, your history here, his crowning, Sting's initial crowning, was delayed by 5 months thanks to that patella injury. And we remember watching that together. But once he won the title, he feuded with Flair in the immediate weeks after the Great American Bash. And then we moved into Ole introducing the whole Black Scorpion deal. And at the same time, they're building Sid, and the match with Sting for Halloween Havoc. So that kind of happened. And then finally, the Black Scorpion angle ends at Starrcade when Flair is revealed as the antagonist from Sting's past. But having spent the past couple of months discussing all this with the benefit of hindsight, what do you think of Sting's first title run? How would you characterize that run? Because it was a little bit, well, we finally got through the breakthrough. He's healthy. Let's get him the belt. And then it just seemed like, do we have him? Who do we have him face? Okay, we'll do Sid at Havoc. Oh, wait, now we need to bring, like I said, well, let's have him fight the Black Scorpion. Let's put the belt back on Flair.
I would have loved to have seen Sting get away from Flair. The whole Black Scorpion thing was just a debacle. It was a mess. Anyway, you look at it, then when it all shakes out and you find out that it was Flair all along, then if you were semi-tired of Flair and Sting, now you're really tired of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then they go in, into that next little program, that brilliant haircut that Jim Herd thought Flair needed. Did you notice that?
I did. Yeah, he's got all the locks.
That was Jim Herd.
Yeah.
That was Jim Herd. Want to cut his hair and put an earring in, call him Spartacus. Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. Oh, I just think Sting, if he would have had a couple of, maybe he could have made a bigger loop with Sid, My God, you could have put Sting with Ron Simmons in a single match, or Butch Reed in a single match, just to get him some wins over some different opponents. He needed a longer push as champion, and just feed him some guys.
Think about it. You had Barry come in dressed up as Sting to cost him, to kind of try to mess with him at Halloween Havoc. So there's a already well-written storyline to have him and Barry go at it for a while because of that.
There you go. Where were you? Why aren't you booking the company then? That was a no-brainer, right?
Yeah,
bring it back. Now he's Barry Windham. He tried to do the screw job. It didn't work.
Screw job finish.
Now I'm still Barry Windham. Now let's see what you got, champ. It's not that hard.
Yeah, I mean, 30-plus years removed, there was definitely some opportunity to make some changes with the booking of the franchise. I also want to talk to you a little bit about the politics and the political situation in WCW at the time, because as we've talked about, you got Jim Herd, he's still in charge of the company. We know how he personally feels about Rick. We've talked about it a few times on the show. But I don't understand why he would greenlight putting Flair back as the champion again. I mean, is this a case where there was no option? Is this a financial decision? Do you remember how the decision for Jim Herd would have been? Yeah, let's make Flair the champ again. It just doesn't seem to,
Well, we don't know what the numbers were.
Yeah.
We don't know what the buy rates were. If it had taken a big dip with Flair not as the champion, then if you're the Kevin Sullivans and the different guys sitting around that room in the booking meeting that would have supported it, they would have went, Jim, hey, you know, look at your numbers when he was a champion. Look at your numbers when he wasn't, which is not fair, but it's an argument that works in front of people that don't know our business. If it's just strictly a guy like Jim Herd who's just looking at numbers and it was up this month, it was down this month, okay, well, who was the champion? Or what was the main event on Clash of Champions? You know, they look at all this other stuff other than understanding when you build a babyface champion, it takes a while. They have to beat a lot of people clean with their finish to get the people's belief in them. That's why you believe them, because when they're in a fight, even though they're hurt, they're going to overcome and they're going to win. That's what makes a babyface.
So Flair was the proven commodity that they said, hey, we've seen what he's done before. Let's pull that lever again and see if he can help bring back those numbers. Yeah.
That I'm assuming. That's all I can do is assume because I wasn't in those meetings.
One thing I'll point out here, Arn and audience, is that Flair's now recognized as the WCW NWA champion instead of just the NWA champion. This brings us to the first fan question for this week's show. And it comes to us from our good friend Brad Stanton. And he wrote in and said, Rick was recognized as the first WCW heavyweight champion. Was it important that Rick was recognized as WCW's first world champion? Do you think that played a role in it? Because, you know, would that have put any bearing on them making the decision like, hey, we want to give Rick that opportunity to be recognized as the first WCW world champion?
God, it's hard, bro. It's a good question. It's hard to know what goes through those people's minds. I know that the thing with Herd and Flair, you know, started to be, it overrode what's the right thing to do to business, for business. It became personal, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And when you get in a pissing match with the boss, it's not going to end well one way or the other. Somebody's going to have to go. You could already see the tension was just, I mean, Rick cut his hair, but I mean, I hear individual voices. When I go to the ring, I hear the individual voices. You know, and there were people that didn't know why he had hair, got his hair cut. Rick, part of his persona was the long white hair.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's trademark. Yep.
It would be like suddenly if he was wearing a black leather vest instead of his robe.
Yeah.
You would go,
who's that? What is he doing?
Rick Flair, what the fuck? Excuse my language. What is that all about?
Yeah, yeah.
And it, when it opens up questions that aren't good questions, now you've taken your eye off the ball, I guess.
We had another fan write in, Ryan, and he said, Rick won the title in a building that was less than 25% full. We mentioned a massive snowstorm in the Northeast. Do you have any recollection of the travel conditions, either getting to the arena or getting out of town after that event? I mean, this is back in 91, but anything that you recall just of that storm?
Well, I mean, snowstorms, people stay home.
That's right.
Walk-ups in the Northeast, you know, I went to all those towns, Newark, the Garden, you know, Meadowlands, you name it, all of those. I'm sure I'm leaving a couple out. But, you know, the fact is, when you got a foot of snow on the ground, people that were going to, you know, okay, well, let's see how we feel that day. It's going to be bad weather. We're not going to have advance tickets. We'll just go to the walk-up thing, walk up and get a ticket. It's a big arena. There'll be tickets there. You know, when people aren't driving, people aren't traveling. And public transportation, I don't think, reached the Meadowland to the degree that it might for the Garden or somewhere else. You know what I mean? It's kind of on the outskirts of town.
Good point. By the way, at this same show, Arn, you and Barry wrestled Doom inside a steel cage. The match went about 4 minutes when Barry pinned Ron after Butch accidentally hit Ron with a foreign object. Doom does break up at Wrestle War the next month when they lose the tag titles to the Freebirds in the same fashion. But this allows Ron to then pursue his singles babyface run that we're all familiar with. But I want to get back to this match for a minute. A steel cage match featuring four fan favorites. It went 4 minutes. I'm going to assume that it was weather related potentially and trying to get the fans out of there. Is there anything else that you can remember? Again, this is a long time ago, but that is a short cage match 4 minutes long?
You know, I don't remember it being that quick. That's too soon for any reason. You know, if the snow's already on the ground, we're already screwed. We're all had rental cars. We're going to be driving in it.
Right.
It would have had, did it go on last? Imagine it did. They had to
you
put
were the
cage
last
up.
Yeah.
To pay it off that quickly after we'd been in some wars with those guys on televised events, right? That seems mighty short. I think we might have screwed the fans that night.
Absolutely. Friend of the show, AFS top guy, Bryant Haremza, commented, since Doom was having trouble at this time, does Arn think that he and Barry were being used as background players to set up the feud between Simmons and Reed? Is that a way that you would feel, or do you feel like, hey, this is just part of our storyline right now, and that's what we're doing?
Well, if that is true, it wouldn't have bothered me. If it were a vehicle to help them launch their angle, which is going to further their career, then that's what being a team player is about.
Arn, we're going to move on from the event in New Jersey. You and Barry continued to work together. You two even cut the first in an amazing series of promos. It's shot in black and white. Buddy, this is NWO before the NWO, but you guys are putting the promotion on notice about what would happen if they crossed paths with the Horsemen of the 90s. And here in our second clip of the week, let's take a look at the warning shot fired by you and BW. Power Hour, January 19th, 1991.
Out there may think, BW, this is a real primitive way of training. Well, maybe we got too civilized toward the end of the 80s. Maybe we got too used to the cushy life. That silver spoon got so big, we had to spit it out. Well, we may have spit out the silver spoon, my friend. There's one thing that you can't get around. The most pure emotion is pain and followed by fear. Tell them, big man.
You know, the 90s have been referred to as the reckoning with truth. In the 80s, everything was clouded. Nobody ever told the truth. In the 90s, the way to go is flat out. Tell no lies. That's the way we're going to do it. When you hear something from our lips, truth it may be, and as much as it may hurt, you can count on it being exactly the way that it is.
Get in touch with your emotions. Find out what your worst phobia is. I want everybody affiliated with WCW to prepare themselves for Armageddon. '91, our resurgence has begun, and don't think you're safe.
The Horsemen don't rest. When we win a championship, we go full bore to keep a championship.
Like so many of our opponents, this is the way they look and feel the morning after a match with us.
This may be a symbolic way of showing you the primitive way we're going to deal with things. America's greatest fear is gang violence. Where the Horsemen are concerned, there's not going to be any drive-by shootings. We're going to keep it legal, but we're going to keep it as violent as the law allows. No one's safe. Jump on the Horsemen. You're going to the hospital in the 90s.
Wow. I mean, this is a different style Horsemen promo. This is a good example of the 90s. You're shooting black and white. You're beating the shit out of cars in a junkyard. You got your hats on backwards. You got sledgehammers. This is hardcore, bro. What do you think of this?
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they let us have a ton of input. Matter of fact, we came up the whole thing. And it just was something different that we had ever done. It wasn't limousines and private planes and fur coats. It was just getting down to nut cutting time.
It was.
And it was like a reset for the horseman and a reset on our thought process. And it was, the black and white was really a nice touch. That's one thing about being with Turner all those years, man. They had all the equipment and all the things you needed to come up with different stuff as far as vignettes and stuff like that. So,
and honestly, it felt like it was kind of ahead of its time. I mean, this has like a whole, I said, joked around the NWO vibe, but now you see some stuff like this with Darby Allin, obviously a different level, but it's that darker style. And do you remember who helped kind of produce this at all? Or do you remember any
of
that?
Okay. Us, pretty much.
No flair, no four, you know, no, like you said, none of the, all the pomp and circumstance. What about Sid? He's not here. This is just you and Barry doing your thing.
Yeah, I thought we needed it. The whole idea was at the end of the rainbow, you're fighting Butch and Ron Simmons, and they're at a different level. You know, it just, the whole primitive fight that you're going to be in, you just had that whole feel of, you know, hitting someone with a sledgehammer is a pretty serious deal. And I just think it just gave it a whole nother look.
Mm. Well, speaking of Sid, the Horseman, Sid Barry, yourself, and Nate took on Sting, Pillman, and the Steiner Brothers in an 8-man tag match that aired on the January 20th edition of the main event. This match, Arn, would be a preview of what we're going to see inside the steel cage at War Games in February. And in our third clip of the week, let's take a look at how this one ended. Again, this is from the main event, January 20th, 1991.
And this one. Vicious power slamming, Flying Bryant. Rick Steiner in. He's thinking about all this he wants. He wants a little bit of Sid Vicious as well. Real bad feelings running very, very deeply in this contest. The lariat by Barry Windham on Flying Bryant. Again, Rick Steiner is in. He's having trouble keeping his composure. The Horsemen now are tagging in and out like a well-oiled machine. Oh, man, what a shot. But Pillman fights back. You got to hand it to the kid from Cincinnati. The world's champion. So punishing. The Flying Bryant continues to compete, continues to fight back. Blair knocked down. Pillman has made the tag. Scott Steiner is in. Scott Steiner nailing Flair. Elevates the world champion. And there's a Steiner line. And one on double A. Windham catches one. Vicious is knocked out of his boots by the man that wants to be the world champion. Scott Steiner nails Flair. But from behind, it's Barry Windham. This one is beginning to break down. The referee is rapidly losing control of this contest. Belly to belly by Rick Steiner on Sid Vicious. It's going to take something like the War Game. They're disqualifying both teams. What an environment here. It's a battleground.
Both teams have been disqualified.
Maybe in Phoenix at the War Game, it can be settled inside the giant steel cage when both rings are setting side by side. But remember, in Phoenix, someone must submit or surrender. And looking at those four, who would it be? I can't even speculate. Who would it be with the Horsemen? You can't speculate on that. But it will be settled at
going to be settled at the War Games, and we're hearing it from JR. He's letting us know all about it. And again, as I said, that's the main event for Russell War, and I can't wait because next week's show, we're going to discuss that centerpiece for February 1991. But for our fans, because you've been in more of them than anyone else, what was your reaction when you found out that WCW was bringing back the Match Beyond?
horrified. I know what it's like to be locked in there with the wrong combination of guys, and you're looking now, you're looking at the Steiners, Sting. Who was their part? Was it Pillman going to be?
Brian Pillman, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, God almighty. War Games was bad news, man. If you started, you were in there about 35, 40 minutes, and there was no let up, nowhere to go, nowhere to hide. Cliche.
You know all about starting up War Games, buddy.
Started them all, and all the ones that I was in anyway. And man, at about the 25-minute mark, you're looking around going, I can't get out of here.
I can't get out.
I just want to get out.
Right. Oh.
So it was, you know, it was a calling card. It was a special match. It was a great idea. And, I mean, I knew we could pull it off. It just, it's going to be physical.
I laugh, and as you said that, but you're dead serious. You literally would look around that match, that, and say, man, this is still going. I still got to fight in this thing. This sucks. This is hard. This is crazy.
Well, there's nowhere to get away. I mean, once you put the lid on that thing, I mean, there's nowhere to go.
Violent.
Yes.
Yeah, you're feeling every bit of it. I mean, how long does it take for you to, and we'll get into it next week, like I said, but to recover from that match where you're just not feeling it anymore?
Well, it's you know, it's a tough business, and the bumps hurt. And in those days, we were in ring shape because we wrestled enough days a month to stay in ring shape. But still, I don't know if in the background there during that last four-way, if you saw Rick Steiner scoop up and belly-to-belly Sid Vicious. In the background, it's like, good God. I mean, these guys are beasts. The Steiner brothers were, you know, we haven't even delved into what animals those two guys are.
Right.
You know, Sting is on a roll. Brian Pillman, you know, was a tough kid.
Much talent.
Yeah. I mean, lock them all in, you know, a cage.
Arn, if the looming War Games doesn't get you fired up, we have another chilling promo. Once again, shot in black and white, man. This is kind of that badass look. You and Barry, you're issuing a warning using the more dangerous part of the town that you're set up in. Let's take a look at the second warning you and Barry issued. Now, this clip was showed to us on NWA Pro from January 26, 1991. Let's take a look.
You look at this dump. St. Hemsley Palace, pal. You can better bet that.
But it's a lot cheaper.
You gotta be asking yourself, how do we walk around in slum tenements? No fear of gangs. You guys scared to walk around this area? And that certainly ain't Dom Perignon, pal. Let me tell you something, we're the horsemen. We come and go as we please, yeah. America's greatest fear is gang violence. Well, there was a bunch of punks with scarves on their head back here. They all piled in a van and hit the bricks. You see, America, World Championship Wrestling in particular, finally getting the idea. Gonna be any drive-by shootings. Nothing illegal. Gonna be some immoral things going on, though. You see, we're gonna take it as far as the law allows. Tell them, BW.
You know, about 5 minutes ago, this place was packed with thugs. And every door is bolted. They're still clipping the padlocks on the doors. This one right here is afraid to come out, afraid to even look out the window. But I'll tell you what, it's this way in every town we go. Every street we walk, every bar, pub, or club we walk in, everybody seems to disappear. And it's happening that way in World Championship Wrestling. Sting, Luger, the Steiners, Doom, in their own element, are nowhere to be found. We came down here looking for Teddy Long. I think he owns this joint, but it got us nowhere.
Let me tell you something. Barry Windham got a funny new haircut, a lot of them say it. Ric Flair got a funny haircut. Ric Flair don't wear three-piece suits anymore. What's the matter with you guys? Well, there ain't nothing the matter with us. What's gonna be the matter is with each and every day that passes, casualties begin to pile up. You take this violent city, you look at these people in the window, scared to death to come outside. That's the way it's always been. That's the way it always will be. The strong survive, and there's strength in numbers. When we're talking about numbers, we're talking about four. The four horsemen.
Gang warfare, horseman style. You enjoying this, Arn?
Downtown Atlanta, buddy. That was a rough neighborhood.
It's clear that someone on the booking committee wants to make sure the horsemen are positioned as the most dangerous men in wrestling.
Well, it was a rebuilding process, and if you looked at the players, you had Sid and Flair in there. The combination was right. It was just, I don't think we were viewed being pushed as the stars. We were viewed as being the star makers, which is fine. But, the components there were to be successful.
Were you excited about this new direction for the Horsemen? Like, did you guys feel like you were rejuvenated by this fresh take?
Well, yeah, and they were giving us, you got to remember, I came from WWF after being there 14 months where they told you, when to go to the bathroom and when not, and just told, micromanaged everything. Wow. Now we were given some creative liberty, and some, our thought process was being used, and they were letting us be creative in our own gimmick, and it was refreshing, to be honest with you.
Yeah, because honestly, man, to me as a fan, this is the most dangerous collection of the Horsemen as far as the presentation that we've seen to this point, right? You've done the trash talking, like you said, limos, women, all that. It's more of a lifestyle. Now it's like you said, we're gangsters. We're coming to whip ass and take names. And it's a different presentation altogether. So this is a little bit of a gamble, but it feels cool. It feels rough. I like it.
Well, the idea was to have a different approach to promoting supposedly the most dangerous match out there. That was the idea, to tie it all in a different way, that everyone that went in that War Games cage was in a different kind of danger than they had ever been in before. And this helped tell that story.
Yeah, there you go. Scott Golden, he says, are there any additional memories that you can share with us about these black and white promos? Any context, anything that you can remember about shooting these? Anything happen while you were trying to shoot him in downtown Atlanta? Any stories?
Well, we had, it was a very small crew. There was, one assistant that came. There was one cameraman, one sound guy. And we just kind of went down there and took over that little complex. And we had to pay a small fee, I think, to the junkyard for the first one.
Okay.
Because we were beating up their cars. The second one, we just kind of bum rushed in and stole the setting. We shot that whole thing in one take. And it was like, guys, if you look around, you know where we're at. You live here in Atlanta. You know more than we do. This is not a good place, and we're probably in some danger here. So let's do what we're going to do and get the hell out of here. But we were more than aware of one of those doors opening and the wrong person coming out. You know what I mean?
Jeez.
Because we had just kind of taken over their neighborhood for a minute.
And it's not like, obviously WCW's headquartered down there, so you guys knew right where to go, too, if you wanted to have that backdrop.
It was literally not too far from the office. It was downtown, but in Atlanta, once you get out of the big high-rise buildings, you don't have to go but three or four blocks to find neighborhoods like we're shooting this in.
It was an awesome effect and very cool presentation. So we close out the month. WCW would present Clash of the Champions, Dixie Dynamite. You and Barry would team up to defeat the Renegade Warriors. Do you remember this team? It's Mark and Chris Youngblood. I'm sure. We have the closing moments of the match. It's our final clip of the week. Let's take a look at how you and Barry were victorious in this tag match. Clash of the Champions, January 30th, 1991.
Hey, now Windham and Anderson have hit that rhythm. They've got those tags. They're coming in and out, keeping the fresh man in the ring. Like a well-oiled machine dream.
Once they get that rhythm, like we know both of them can, They are hard to beat, and they can punish a man. They can take a man to the limit. They can take a man down as quick as anything. Right here, Arn Anderson, the smarter he is. Now, well, you watch this move right here. He's got a hold of this guy. He's leaning on it. Now, you see right here, if you're at home, take your wife, get up in the living room, put her in this hole and lean on her and see how quick she'll break down like a shotgun.
Yeah. Hey. Front face lock. Oh, right, their heads cracked together. The back of Anderson's head right in the face of young Chris Youngblood.
I'm telling you,
I can see a lot. There's a lot of men getting in trouble right now. Honey, stand up. I'm going to front face lock.
Yeah, they go. I mean, don't hurt them because we love them. We can't do without them.
Oh, man. That is a big-time offensive move there. Inverted atomic drop by Double A. He's going for the rope for a high-risk move, and he caught it. He got a knee. Youngblood got the knee right up into the lower abdomen.
I'll tell you what, Jimbo, right there is a very unusual move for Arn Anderson. That's a high-risk move off the top. You never see him do that type of move, and it backfired on him right there. He did get his knees up just in time, and that will take that midsection and put it back behind your belly button.
Tag was made. Here comes Mark Youngblood, knocking Anderson down. He knocks Big Barry Windham down. The Indians on the warpath here with that tomahawk chop. And now all four men are in the ring.
I'll tell you, they couldn't up Jack now. I know they're going for it. They got to keep moving here. They got to stay on top. They need a legal man. There needs to be somebody in here in case we go for a fall. Great move right here by Barry Windham.
Windham got rid of one of the Youngbloods. He got rid of Mark Youngblood. The horse must know how Custer feels or felt. Youngblood sent for the ride there. And full Barry Windham got him with a lariat. I mean, he got him all.
Well, we're getting ready to see right here the horsemen at their best. The horsemen at work right here. They're setting him up right here. I'm talking about, we're talking 10, 12 feet off
superplex.
The air. Superplex time.
Windham with a superplex, but Anderson's the legal man in the ring. Anderson detained the referee, and the horsemen win it.
Ladies and gentlemen, the winners of the match, Barry Windham and Arn Anderson.
Exclusively on pay-per-view, the horsemen will ride into Wrestle War, into War Games, and they know what it's like to pay the price, an impressive victory here.
The horsemen ride, and man, how fun is Dusty Rhodes on commentary?
Wait a minute. He just said, if you're at home, get up off the table, put your wife in a front face lock, and lean on her.
It was so good. Oh, Dusty.
Oh, I know I popped at the wrong time in the wrong place that you're going to hear in the background, but that was tremendous.
It's so good, man. And for you, it's got to be like just hearing him again.
Yeah. I mean, he was very unique, man. He was just a lot of fun to be around.
He was back home. He's fresh off his run with the WWF, and he's on commentary. So there you go. We saw Barry hit that beautiful superplex with the float over. I dare say there wasn't, and even now, a better superplex than the one delivered by that man. He just delivered that so smoothly.
Yeah, and he could do it to Animal or anybody. I saw it, 300-pounder, same thing.
And while the Youngbloods here aren't positioned as a high-profile opponent, this certainly reinforced the messaging of the two promos we watched earlier in the show, that, hey, you guys are badasses, you're here, you're ready to do Wrestle War, and you move on. You move on, you wrap up the month, and on to Wrestle War we go. We have a question from dear friend of the show, Drew Landry, and he said, we love it when you talk about Barry Windham. And we've asked this question before, but we're going to ask it again. What was it about Barry that made him such a great tag team partner? You two had such great chemistry.
Barry just, he got it. He knew that, you know, being a great babyface for all the years that he was, he knew how important it was for a great heel to know his role. No, he wasn't supposed to out-punch the babyface, out-wrestle the babyface, punk the babyface out. Your job as a heel is to get out-wrestled, get out-punched, get out-finessed, and see one opening and then take a cheap shot and then try to kill the guy.
Yeah.
That's what being a heel is, and that's the difference in the two. And he knew to come in there. The one thing you had to do is create something. You had to create the babyface and create this situation that everything I do, he's one step further. Barry knew all that, and your top heels knew it. Bobby Eaton knew it. Dennis Condrey knew it. Blanchard knew it. Rick knew it. You know, your great heels know you got to make before you tear down. And that was Barry. And Barry was just so skilled. Naturally, he had his dad's genetics. He was strong as an ox. He moved like a gazelle. He just had so many natural tools. He was just a natural performer. It just came easy to him.
So smooth in the ring.
God.
Arn, we move on. On the same night as we just talked about there with Clash of the Champions, Rick wrestled Scott Steiner for the WCW NWA World Champion. That match is the genesis of a decade-long issue between Flair and Steiner because Steiner accused Flair of sandbagging the match. Do you remember that feedback immediately, or is it something that you've only heard about past this event?
Well, it just didn't leap off the page at the time that that's what was going on. It wasn't that obvious. I have to go back and watch the match to see if there's something that could have been done more, in my opinion. Something could have been done less. I'm not sure.
All right. Well, we're going to close the show with some fan questions. Drew Landry's up first. He wants to know, where you rank your program with Doom? Is it on the level of the Rock and Roll Express, the Midnights, or the Rockers? Where would you rank that program with them?
In physicality, probably number one. That match was not geared to get us over. It was geared to have an unpredictable match on the card that you couldn't call a winner or a loser and put some star power into it. The Midnight, we were put in a position with like the Midnight and the Rock and Roll and those guys and the Rockers to draw money and to get over and to feature our stuff. And that's the difference. You know, Ricky and Robert were the best at that. You know, they were the flip side of the coin. We knew to make those guys two guys that would not quit, that were smaller, that, you know, maybe they didn't stack up in power or any of those things going for them, but they just wouldn't quit, and you couldn't keep them down. And, you know, that's what they brought to the table. Different deals. One was got, like I said, was set up for us to feature us. Doom was meant just to be a damn bar fight.
There you go. And what a bar fight it was. Wrestling Alternate Commentary wants to know what memories you have of Paul Heyman. Did you think that he would have the impact on the business that he did from 1991 to present day?
Well, you always knew Paul was smart. You knew he was gung-ho. You knew he was a student of the business. You knew he had a bright future. He was really young when I first met him, and you know, I was just impressed, you know, the knowledge that he had. You could tell he had studied it his entire life and was going to do well. You know, he's been around a long time now, and his opinion is valued with the company he works for, so he's had a hell of a run.
He sure has. Final question this week, Bryant Haremza wants to know how difficult it was for you to balance a tag team rivalry while also trying to compete and win your television title back. You were doing both back then.
Yeah, I was, you know, I really didn't see. It was just the way you approach a tag match was the only difference. When I was wrestling for the TV title, there was, again, I didn't have to beat them. They had to beat me. So that was always the story with the TV title. Tag matches were, take your partner, manipulate the situation, manipulate the referee, manipulate the other guy that's on the apron and get an advantage and push the advantage and cut the ring off and make it a two-on-one match was, you know, the strategy there. So I was pretty much tuned in to whatever that day it was.
Arn, that's going to conclude our coverage of January 1991. What a fun month it was. The Horsemen have a harder edge, which we talked about. Flair wins the belt back. The Dream, Dusty Rhodes, returns to WCW. And we got War Games coming in February, and we're going to talk all about that. The War Games match, it's one of the most memorable ones of all time. And one reason, among others, is that it's the only War Games match the Horsemen ever won. And Arn, you were not even in it. This is going to be crazy. Find out all about it next week. And remember, support AA at arnlinks.com. That's where you'll find the links to the Horsemen and Arn Show stores, the episode archives, and links to all our social media, plus our YouTube channel. If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel. That's where it's at. But Arn, we are out of time this week. On behalf of the Enforcer, AA, Arn Anderson, this is Paul Bromwell. And we'll see you right back here next week on Arn.